On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the close of an absolutely marvelous, beautiful, magnificent July day here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia, Stan. This is the horn for the 24th day of July, 2015. Yes, before I get emails, I said the 24th day of July, 2015. This program is live. Indeed, 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 and this being the 24th of July, 2015, well, by golly, it's a Friday, and that means it's Friday on the front porch. So here in about 57 minutes and change, we will be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that comprises our Friday on the front porch conversation. The easiest way, of course, to participate in Friday on the front porch is via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Capably moderated for, lo, yea, verily, these many, many years by none other than Sparky. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, all you have to do is get on Skype, and using Skype is incredibly easy. Get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and he'll get you where you need to be so you can be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you are absolutely precluded from using Skype, you can use the stress line, which is, of course, area code 304-663-4676. It's just that simple. Indeed, indeed. I guess it's not so nice in other parts of the country. I mean, it's hot today, but it was just, well, you know, we've been in monsoon season here, so it was dry. And just a bluebird, blue sky day, a few puffy white clouds floating by, warm. And I'm trying to cherish that because I know by February I'll be cussing the snow. But yeah, Carol tells me it's 112 in Hooterville. It's supposed to be hotter tomorrow. Lord God, take precautions. If I was out in that kind of stuff, I'd have to be dipped by the heel in the morning in SPF Avogadro's number. So, yeah, it's Friday on the front porch, and we'll gather together in the chat room as well. If you'd like to jump in there, it's very easy. That is a matter of simply going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom and then picking yourself out a screen name and a password and hopping right in. Lottie and Sparky are in there to moderate and make sure that no right-wingers or asshats disturb the reverie that is the multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the regular broadcast hours of the program. Betsy says 99 degrees in Austin, hotter tomorrow. I hate Java. Java is highly uncooperative. I have to get into the into the chat room through the so-called back door. It's pain, yeah. But it is what it is. So there you have it. Thanks, profound thanks, going out this evening to Dave. Thank you very kindly, Dave in Ohio. They've wiped out this week's deficit. and that's huge. So we will finish the week okay. And that gets a couple of bills paid. Well, they've already been paid, as a matter of fact. I kind of do that when things like that happen. So thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. That is not to say that we don't need continued help. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan, who just jumped in to help. That is much appreciated. And it would be great if we could get one day out in front, or two, or three even. It'd be really helpful. But thank you very kindly to Dave and to Jim, and thank you to an anonymous contributor who matched Chris's challenge last night because it had gone unanswered. Thank you very much. So, yeah, Friday on the front porch, and it's... This stuff is what do you say that this is occurring with too much regularity? These godforsaken shootings. You're aware now that there was one in Lafayette, Louisiana last night, and lo and behold, another one today. Yeah, this one at an elementary school. In Converse, Texas, not too awfully far from San Antonio. In this case, the butcher's bill that we always the butcher's bill that we randomly pay for the privilege of having the Second Amendment, the butcher's bill was a little bit lighter. The teenager who was shot was merely wounded, not killed. The injuries were said to be non-life-threatening. Shortly after the incident, the individual suspected of doing the shooting with the Freedom Protector that will keep the government's boot off of our neck, just ask the NRA or Gun Goobers for America, Larry Pratt, that bunch of blood-sodden monstrosities, misanthropes. Shortly after the shooting incident, in Converse, Texas, at Eloff Elementary School, the person suspected of doing the shooting was found dead in a residential neighborhood. The news story that I'm looking at, courtesy of Tim from L.A., is from My San Antonio. And it says cryptically, it is not immediately clear how the alleged shooter died. That means it could be either suicide or the police gunned the person down. Who knows? I suppose details will be forthcoming. But it might be sort of a take-a-number situation because details are still forthcoming on the Freedom Protector who committed America's second movie theater massacre last night. I mean, they at least waited for Dillinger to get outside the Biograph Theater. The G-Men did up in Chicago. I've got that right, don't I? That anniversary was not too awfully long back. It was 2 days ago, as a matter of fact. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, the Internet's most historically erudite satirist, noted, July 22nd, 1934, John Dillinger picks the wrong movie. John Dillinger thought he looked like Clark Gable. And who was going to tell him otherwise? So the notorious bank robber was eager to see his twin's latest film, Manhattan Melodrama. Gable portrayed a suave, charming racketeer. He apparently saw his resemblance to John Dillinger. The film tells the story of Blackie Gallagher, and Jim Wade, devoted friends since boyhood. One grows up to be a lawyer, and the other a criminal. If you can't tell the professions apart, Eugene says, a lawyer might have better diction. The gangster Blackie even kills to protect his friend, and then Jim has to prosecute Blackie. But Blackie doesn't mind going to the chair if it helps his friend become governor. And Blackie and Jim are in love with the same woman, but since she's Myrna Loy, that's the one plausible part of the plot. So imagine seeing this film, then stepping out of the Biograph Theater and into an FBI shooting range. Wouldn't it have been more merciful to have shot him before he saw the film? Better yet, the feds could have taken him to a better movie. If the condemned get last meals, why not last films? That was 2 days ago, the anniversary of the killing of John Dillinger. But it was just last night at the screening of Trainwreck, a rom-com, I guess, of a sort of modernized role reversal on the typical tired old plot device that, you know, a guy just can't commit, only in this case it's Amy Schumer, and she can't commit, and there's a guy who really wants to, whatever. In the aftermath of the shooting in Louisiana, Amy Schumer put out a statement saying how shocked and horrified and saddened she was by it all. No comments from Amy Schumer about our gunned-up culture, a culture in which guns can be had more easily than fishing licenses. But that's not a criticism of Amy Schumer. I mean, she doesn't want to piss off the gun goobers. They shoot at people. A lot. So I completely understand. We're learning quite a bit about the shooter. 2 dead, 7 injured. Older guy. Yeah. 59 years old. John Russell Hauser. Of course, of Phoenix City, Alabama. Phoenix City sits hard by the Georgia-Alabama state line. I believe it's pretty close to Columbus, Georgia, is it? No, he's not a Muslim. Sorry, NRA. Sorry, Fox. Sorry, right wing. He's one of yours. And apparently, he did know how to use the interweb tubes, and he used it, of course, to post impressions of, or his impressions of what was wrong with this here country. Yeah, by the way, my apologies. The Skype computer just shut itself down and restarted itself. I'm trying to get back into Skype now. John Russell Hauser, 59 years old. Decided he hated his country. Well, he loves his country, mind you. He just hates what's become of it. America is so sick that I now believe it to be the enemy of the world. I know next to nothing about Iran, but the little I do know tells me they are far higher morally than this financially failing filth farm. He certainly was the alliterative sort, wasn't he? Financially failing filth farm. What else did he say? If you don't think the internet is censored, Try reading a newspaper from a country that hates liberals the way I do. Apparently, he can't find anybody. He can't find any newspapers that are that were conservative enough to suit him. He had a Facebook page. He only liked two things: I Hate Liberals and the Crossroads Irish American Festival. So he decided to take his Second Amendment rights and his Second Amendment Freedom Protector and clean up the financially failing filth farm by gunning down a couple of teachers and shooting seven other people in a movie theater on Thursday night in Lafayette, Louisiana. He also doesn't like mouthy women, which kind of, well, he doesn't like for women to, I guess the churches in the financially failing filth farm have been ruined as well, yeah. He's very definitely a Christian. The Bible doesn't ask me to like what it says, only to obey it. Death comes soon to the financially failing filth farm called the U.S. Uh-huh. I used to be able to talk a lot longer about these shootings, but I'm all talked out. Maybe you've got a better take on it. Maybe you've got something to say that hasn't been said. Because I'm whooped. And really, I'm not whooped. We're all whooped. This country is licked. At least from the standpoint of being protected against random acts of white, male, Christian, gunned up domestic violence, domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. I observed last night that this is just a matter of us making another installment payment on our butcher's bill, otherwise known as the Second Amendment. Sparky observed that we only seem to be, we never seem to pay anything but the interest. And that's the absolute truth. We don't touch the principal. We can't touch the principal, because it's enshrined in the Bill of Rights. The Second Amendment guarantees these events. And a nation of more than 330 million individuals stands around a giant roulette wheel, where instead of numbers, we have names of towns, cities, communities. Place your bets, round and round she goes. Where she stops, nobody knows. La jeu s'en fait, la jeu s'en fait. And the little marble drops. And last night it landed in Lafayette, Louisiana. Today it landed in Converse, Texas. A couple of weeks back it landed in Charleston, South Carolina. Last Friday it landed in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Round and round she goes. And see, the problem with this roulette wheel is that we are all compelled to play the game. We don't have the option that the computer did at the end of War Games, that 1980s nuclear Holocaust cautionary tale.
Shall we play a game?
We're not like the computer. We can't learn. We can't run through every permutation of the game. And finally, as the missiles are and the ICBMs are fueling and ready to launch, we can't look and say,
the only way to win is not to play.
We have to play. We have no choice. Children in elementary schools like Sandy Hook have no choice. Young scholars walking across the green at a university like Virginia Tech have no choice. Members of the armed forces at recruiting stations in Chattanooga have no choice. Moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado and Lafayette, Louisiana have no choice. A student in Converse, Texas has no choice. Because the National Rifle Association compels us all to play. And the people who have convinced that that Kenyan Muslim usurper in the White House, our White House, is going to get their guns, compel us to play. And all the lawful gun owners can't do a damned thing about the awful gun owners. Mr. Hauser, you might be interested in knowing, was a fan and a visitor to a Christian Tea Party blog called Fellowship of the Minds, as Lottie notes in the chat room. It was at Fellowship of the Minds where he wrote that Iran is higher morally than this financially failing filth farm. The avatar at Fellowship of the Minds, of course, says, "Stand with Rand." He had a brief fling with Twitter, too. He said, "Westboro Baptist Church may be the last real church in America. Members not brainwashed." Oh, I'm sorry. No. It's the I Hate Liberals political organization on Facebook that has the Stand With Rand avatar. My bad. We regret the error. Oh, yeah, this guy was a real winner. He showed up at least a dozen times on a TV talk show in the 1990s. Calvin Floyd hosted the Rise and Shine program on WLTZ-TV. And Calvin Floyd just kind of enjoyed it because, well, he said, well, whatever he wanted to talk about, it would generate calls. He was anti-abortion. The best I can recall, Rusty had an issue with feminine rights. He was opposed to women having a say in anything. You could talk with him a few minutes and you would know he had a high IQ, but there was a lot missing with him. Well, nobody who talked to him about selling him a firearm thought there was anything wrong with him because he got the gun. 13 rounds he squeezed off. Even had time to reload. His estranged wife told police, "Sometimes he forgets to take his medication, and sometimes he forgets to eat, which affects his behavior as well." Along the way, according to Calvin Floyd, along the way, Hauser had suggested that using violence against women's reproductive health care centers was an acceptable tactic. Calvin Floyd did provide this interesting piece of information. He was a Republican. Of course he was. When's the last time a kumbaya-singing liberal Democrat blew away people in a movie theater? Huh? Round and round she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. Another terrified cracker out there in terrified cracker land. Ron and Raleigh with the obligatory question. Hey, Bob. I'm told that the only thing that can stop these shootings is a good guy with a gun. Well, where the hell are they when these guys start shooting everyone in sight? Well, see, that's the problem, Ron. Hauser was a good guy with a gun. He was going to help clean up the financially failing filth farm. And that's the kind of thing a good guy with a gun would do. All the other good guys with guns wouldn't recognize him as a bad guy with a gun because he believes the same thing that the vast majority of most of the good guys with the guns believe. By the way, just as was the case with Dylann Roof, Hauser has been referred to as troubled. Now, you might recall that the U.S. attorney for, the Eastern District of Tennessee didn't waste any time in referring to Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz as a domestic terrorist. Well, he was all brown-skinned and stuff. It was pretty obvious, wasn't it? But you know who I first thought of? When I saw Mr. Hauser's photograph, I immediately thought how near, how desperately, terrifyingly near a little community called Islamburg, New York, came to having the little white marble drop in the slot called Islamburg. Because I thought immediately of Robert Doggart, Christian minister, educated man, electrical engineer. Who's on home confinement right now, awaiting the outcome of his indictment, not for domestic terrorism, but for conveying an interstate threat. By God, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Tennessee sure threw the pamphlet at him.
I can't even begin to imagine what they're thinking up in New York at that little community right now. Because even the U.S. even U.S. law enforcement and the Department of Justice won't protect them when the threat was communicated out front and the militia members were recruited. And the best they can get is an indictment for conveying an interstate threat. I can't tell you how many news outlets have referred to Hauser as a drifter.
Wah, wah, wah.
Drifter. He wasn't drifting. He was seeking out a target. But we can't tell America that. See, this is why we can't. You want to know? I mean, because this is just the conversation that we have here in our little safe community. We can't tell the truth about the real domestic hazard in the United States because Emery and Marvelline might never leave their house again. Because, see, Emery and Marvelline and the septuagenarian, octogenarian viewership of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they never see anybody that doesn't look like them. Unless they're seeing them on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which is, of course, safe because it provides a warning to Emery and Marvelline about all the dangerous dark-skinned people. Because Emery and Marvelline and all the other Fox viewers think that's who the dangerous people are. But the really dangerous people in this country are, by and large, white and male. They vote conservative. They support firearms ownership, unlimited and untrammeled. Because freedom! And there is absolutely no way of knowing when or where they're going to kill. White America would stay in its house and never leave again if we told the truth about the real danger in this country. I was in the Wiggling Pig the other night. They've been getting some real good cantaloupes lately. Sweet. Oh. And the guy in front of me had his camo ball cap on. Was talking about some recent incident of redneckery that had occurred with him. And it's not like I was listening in. I was just next in line there in the checkout. And he was talking to a buddy, apparently somebody he hadn't seen in a while, who was in from out of town. And the snippet of conversation that I walked into had our man there saying, "Yeah, and now the cops is probably going to come get me because I shot a weapon within 500 feet of a dwelling." When he came straight to my house, and my old lady had just picked the baby up off the love seat and took her to lay her down, put her down for bed, and that son of a bitch come and shot a gun, went right through my wall and right into the love seat where my little girl was. And they're going to come and arrest me. And, of course, that's a conversation in West Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas. Fully half of this country. Does that, I mean, is that an order? And there wasn't anything special about it. It was just a couple good old boys talking there in the Wiggling Pig. And this is a serious question. This is not rhetorical at all. Is this a question? Is this something? I mean, let's say I spoke Spanish. Is this a conversation I'd hear down to the Tienda Mexicana? Just a couple of good old boys speaking Spanish. Is it a conversation I would hear in the black community? I suspect it's not. I don't think. Maybe. But it's an anywhere white America conversation. But you can't tell white America that because white America will then, I don't know, go into denial? And see, that conversation that I heard. And no, I'm not Thomas Friedman in a goddamn taxi cab in New York. I'm not making this up. This really happened. I think there was a witness. Maybe Ferg. Or maybe I was by myself. I don't know. I'm in and out of the Wiggling Pig most days. It's always something. Especially damn cantaloupes. Oh! I mean, warm or cold, just good. But the thing is, in that conversation, and wow, did I keep my mouth shut. I just moved on through, bought my cantaloupe, moved on. But there was a disconnect there. I mean, I felt like I was listening to something, I don't know, a conversation that might take place in Somalia or Haiti. Or one of the more gang-infested, cartel-infested parts of Mexico. But no, it was just another day in hillbilly America. Where people wander around with guns and you know, hell, fellas, stand there, he wasn't doing nothing wrong. Yeah, he was just shooting his gun. I mean, he wasn't shooting at nobody. But he's within 500 feet of a dwelling, so they're probably going to come and arrest him because we got a law here in West Virginia, dadgummit. Can't discharge a firearm within 500 feet of a dwelling. And so he gets into fisticuffs with this feller, and he don't fight him. I mean, he doesn't shoot him or nothing, but the guy comes along a little bit later and puts a bullet through his house. And one of the more interesting aspects of just overhearing this is that the guy wasn't hopping up and down mad. I mean, he didn't have blood in his eyes. He was just figured he had a handle on the reality of the situation. Now they're going to come and arrest me for shooting 500 feet of a dwelling. That man done come damn night is killing my little baby girl. She'd been dead if my old lady hadn't already took her off to bed. Just minutes before. Gosh, I'm licked. I am, I'm licked. Jack, and thanks to Jack for joining in on the fundraising this evening, Jack in Shreveport. Jack says, subject line, Lafayette related. One, shooter from Alabama with connections to Nazi writings and things you said. Racist, you think? No, I know. Tweet below shows a couple of statistics.
55th person to accidentally shoot herself this month was an Ohio woman getting out of a car, accidentally Second Amendmented herself with a loaded gun in her purse.
Jesus.
I ain't got any sense. None at all. Steve in New York, subject line, the latest shooting. Says, I've been inside working all day. I'll be honest. When I first saw word of the shooting, I thought it was a report of a prior one, because frankly, I couldn't believe it was another one. Seriously, they're becoming so numerous, I can't keep track. Your tone of voice perfectly reflects where I am. Bob, I feel like there's nothing more to say. It's hard to be outraged anymore. It's hard to be anything but completely exasperated. It's like having a meth-addicted son who won't admit he has a problem. You bail him out of jail again, but he continues to tell you he has no problem, and you throw your hands up and just wait till the next relapse. This is a disease. And until we begin to approach it like that, and as simple and cliched as it is, admit we have a problem, it's going to be nothing more than a waiting game until it happens again. My heart is truly sad for these people and for my addicted country until we admit we have a problem. But by God, there was no evidence of a problem on display last night. Oh, I watched the live coverage, live from outside the movie theater there in Lafayette, Louisiana. I mean, they had the chief of police of Lafayette. They had the complete top of the command chain, colonel of the Louisiana State Police, and they had Governor Piyush Bobby Jindal. Mm-hmm. The man who, as a child, was so ashamed of his brown skin and so ashamed of his otherness that all he wanted to do was be plain white Bobby Brady. That's a conversation for a different time. But after the chief of police and the head of the whole entire complete Louisiana State Police got done talking about the heroic response of our first responders and the heroic response of the people who jumped in front of the shooter and took the bullet. There comes Piyush Jindal. And what did Piyush Jindal say? I got a now Bob warning from Agnes over this, because I started stuttering. You know, when I go all nonverbal, just make strange little forest creature noises. Because Piyush Jindal, governor of the state of Louisiana, and man, with statements like this, you can understand why he has an approval rating in his own state that you have to have a scanning electron microscope to read. Piyush Jindal, who back in college was an amateur exorcist, I'm not kidding. Piyush Jindal looked square into the camera and said, "Nobody could have ever imagined this would happen in Lafayette." Bobby dipped. I had no idea. Piyush has suspended his presidential campaign after the Lafayette shooting, but nobody noticed. This, he claims, is a matter of him making a personal sacrifice for the betterment of his state. Meanwhile, most of the people in Louisiana are going, "No, Piyush, really, go to Iowa. Please." But when Piyush said that, "No one could have imagined that this would have happened in Lafayette," I did. I was reduced to little animal noises. Clicks and pops and grunts. And the occasional hoot. Because, of course, you can imagine it happening in Lafayette. Because you can imagine it happening in Bozeman, Montana.
Because you can imagine it happening in Peoria and Poughkeepsie. Because you can imagine it happening in Phoenix City, Alabama. Or Chattanooga. Or Charleston. Or Converse, Texas. Or Aurora, Colorado. Or Tucson. Or Newtown, Connecticut. You can imagine it happening in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. You can imagine it happening in Midlothian, Virginia. You can imagine it happening in Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania. You can imagine it happening in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. You can imagine it happening in Calumet, Illinois. You can imagine it happening in Pontiac, Michigan. You can imagine it happening, oh God, in Fulton, Missouri. Taos, New Mexico. Topeka, Kansas. Augusta, Maine. Springfield, Massachusetts. Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Durham, North Carolina. You can imagine it happening anywhere in America because we have a system that we have designed to make it possible for this to happen anywhere in America. Good God, I just got a note from Isaac. There have been 204 mass shootings in 204 days in 2015. But just as was the case with my camouflage ball cap wearing buddy up at the Wiggling Pig, there's a America can't make a connection between this blood-soaked goddamn roulette wheel and the Second Amendment. And the same godforsaken talking points are going to be out there again.
Well, obviously, he was mentally unstable.
Then how the f*** did a mentally unstable man get hold of a firearm? You want to know how? I'll tell you how. Because the NRA has an official position paper that says that it is discrimination against the mentally ill to prevent them from having firearms. They've got another position that says that it's discrimination against the blind to keep the blind from having firearms.
And I know we have visually challenged members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who think that that is crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass. But we're beat. There's no changing this. This is what America's going to be. Now, just a very brief time before all of this broke loose, yesterday, President Obama was giving an interview to the BBC in which he said he still wanted to work on our gun violence problem. And I'm right there with you, President Obama. But I suspect your idea of working on the gun violence problem is decidedly milder than my idea of working on the gun violence problem. But it doesn't matter which idea we consider, it ain't gonna happen. Remember when the Senate took up the issue of something as simple as requiring background checks at so-called gun shows, you know, firearms flea markets? And the Senate peed all over itself trying to get to the little button to cast their no vote. And everybody said, what a national shame this was. Well, the part that we tend to forget is that that would have then had to go to the House, and there ain't no prayer that that would have ever gotten past the House of Representatives and landed on President Obama's desk. Because the Republicans that run the House and the Senate and a significant minority of Democrats, and it's enough, live in mortal terror of the NRA. Not because the NRA will come and shoot them, but because the NRA will tell the people who vote for them, he's against your right to be a freedom American and have freedom protectors. When in point of fact, anybody advocating for what are called common sense gun laws is actually against, what they're against is their own constituents having to stand at this godforsaken demonic roulette wheel and watch that white, 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 white marble go round and round and round and round until it lands on their name. This July the 24th, 2015, is, as noted, the 204th day of 2015, and there have been 204 mass shootings. One dead, five injured in West Columbus shooting, four shot in grocery store ambush, one dead, four injured in Stockton shooting, seven people shot inside Louisville nightclub, four men shot in Suffolk early Sunday morning. Two dead, two hospitalized in Bryce Street shooting. Nine dead in shooting at Black Church in Charleston. Four Marines. Gunman opens fire on Louisiana movie theater. Oh, wait. Well, okay, mass shooting. I guess the kid in Texas doesn't even count. No, the mass shooting tracker, which is they identify as a crowdsourced project of the anti-gun folks. You know, thank you, Washington folks, the anti-gun folks. Why do they have to be anti-gun? Why can't they be pro-ability of people to go to a goddamn movie and see it all the way to the end without getting murdered, folks? How is it people who are opposed to just letting everybody who wants one have a damn gun in this country are anti-gun instead of pro-life? Why aren't they pro-life? Oh, no, that's reserved for the right-wing idiots who are obsessed with how with the workings and choices are made about said workings in a woman's insides. Oh, they're the pro-life ones. Not the people who want to pull people back from this godforsaken roulette wheel. But Bobby Jindal can't. It was unimaginable that this would happen in Lafayette. Why? Is Lafayette a gun-free zone? Has Bobby personally shut down all the gun stores in Lafayette? Do they not sell bullets? What was he expecting? What was imaginable? Crossbows? Swords? Rocks? Mumbly Peg? I said I had nothing more to say, and I've been saying it for 55 minutes. And for that, I guess I apologize. But this is harder. This is harder than Annie Sullivan with Helen at the Well. And her task was so hard that they referred to what Annie Sullivan did as being a miracle worker. But all she was trying to do was awaken memories of infancy and the sound of language and the idea of communication and the notion that there was that there was a right way and a wrong way to go about conveying information or needs. And so she stood there at that pump at Ivy Green in Tuscumbia, Alabama, and she pumped the water continuously onto little Helen Keller's hands, and she spelled out W-A-T-E-R into little Helen's hands. Water, Helen, it has a name, W-A-T-E-R, water. And yet if we stood... if we were somehow able to stand with a pump pouring gushing blood onto the palms of millions of Americans and spelled into their hands G-U-N-S, there is a reason, G-U-N-S. The idiots would spell back,
F-R-E-E-D-O-M, freedom.
Like I suspect many Americans, I'm rethinking, and you know, what a rotten thing to do to an industry. Granted, Hollywood is not the... most benign of industries, but there's entertainment there. Granted, they sell us a hell of a lot of gun violence and car crashes. If I never see the latest Tom Cruise Mission Impossible trailer again, it will be too soon. There's a lot of dreck that comes out, but you know what? One person's nightshirt is another person's pajamas. But I'm seriously thinking about whether or not I ever want to go into another movie theater. And who knows? I mean, this guy was a wingnut. I mean, this guy was a serious participant, a serious believer in the same stuff that Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and Savage and Beck and Alex Jones all believe in. And how often do they inveigh against Hollywood liberals? My friends, the Hollywood liberals want you to... I mean, Jesus, I got a Rush clip right here. I won't play for you. But, what did he say? I mean, this is precious. In regard to the whole Planned Parenthood fraud. Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, said... the typical low-information woman wants to, oh my God, wants to sell her aborted fetus for profit. Well, what the fuck is wrong with that, Rush? You're the capitalist, buddy! This was because some idiot called in and said women would begin suing Planned Parenthood for their share of the profits from abortions. Everybody wants to matter. Everybody wants to think they're contributing to the advancement of the human race. when they're having an abortion. So Planned Parenthood can convince them that they're furthering humanity by doing this. A typical low-information woman who thinks she's serving humanity then finds out she's being screwed and wants her take, especially after what the abortion cost her. She's going to want her take of what they're selling. She's going to want her Lamborghini, too, right along with Ma Richards' daughter, who wants her Lamborghini. It's a good point, Gabe. And they go on and on and on about Hollywood. So... you reckon maybe that wasn't just a random choice? Unimaginable. Inconceivable. The goddess of irony doesn't love us that much. There's no way she would make Piyush say that it was inconceivable. You reckon there's a reason Hauser chose a movie theater? Apart from the fact that there were lots of people in it, there were 100 people in the theater. Note from Carol, she says, I have a friend working in Saudi Arabia. He says they talk about gun violence in the States all the time, and they feel safer in the Middle East. That speaks volumes. Yeah, it does. There's lots of places in the world you're safer than the United States. This morning somebody interviewed, they were down to interviewing the guy who was the marketing director of the ambulance company who responded to the scene in Lafayette. And, of course, he said the name of his company. I've even remembered it so many times. Wow, free advertising. Capitalism. So what if we're trying to make a buck on the dead and maimed? Bessie says Lucas feels much safer in Israel than he did in Texas. He also felt safer when he was in Prague. Hey! I may have gotten ripped off in Belgium, but I didn't figure the guy was going to shoot me. Oh, God. So, it's 2 minutes past the hour. And again, if you've never participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the Horn, you are most cordially invited to. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. We'll get you started. So we'll take a little break and get the conversation going. Nice comment here from Robert near Morgantown. Any nation that is more concerned about illegal possession of drugs or marijuana than it is illegal firearms is really screwed up. That would be us. I understand, Steve. Steve with a note says, Bob, I love the Horn, but I almost can't listen to this anymore. Perhaps I'm weak, perhaps I'm lily-livered, but I'm trying to recover from depression, losing my job, the government breathing down my neck. I know I have it better than most with a license to practice law, so I technically have options, but this level of death, destruction, and sadness is getting to be more than I can listen to. I'm sorry if I do time out for a while. No worries. Take a break. By all means, Steve. No harm, no foul. Nobody's going to be offended here. Hell. I think we'd all love to have a break. We'd all love to live in a country where this didn't dominate the news. You know what the only part of the news this didn't dominate? The only part of the news this did not dominate was the conversation, the telephone conversation they had this morning on Morning Joe with T-Rump. Yeah, by the way, that's the new name for him, courtesy of our buddy Tom in the Bay Area. T-Rump. Not T-R-U-M-P Trump. T-Rump. Like T-Rex. Or T-Asshat. T-Rump. So, yeah, a little break, and we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oop, wrong song. We played that last night. I've been on a Warren Zevon kick. You'll forgive me. But this seems to work. Warren Zevon. Maybe there could be a sequel to Excitable Boy if he was still around. Maybe it could be called Troubled Young Man or Troubled Man. Eesh. 9 past the hour, and we're getting ready to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for Friday on the Front Porch. If you want to jump in on the phone side, the stress line is open, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Let's see what's going on over there. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Well, it's been nice out here the last few days. I mean, anytime it's under 90 degrees, it's a nice day. So I've been out working in the shop.
You're building, no less.
Yeah, built a brand new set of steps for the sliding glass door. When they built this house, there was no steps there, and my dad had, I think there was no patio either. He poured a patio, and then he didn't make concrete steps. He just made a set of wooden steps, and I don't know how many years ago was it that was, but it's about worn out, so I figured it was time. And I had the wood and everything for a long time. I was planning and doing, and just never got the urge. Well, I got the urge and the bug yesterday.
You know, I've worked that way too. I mean, I couldn't build a set of stairs if my life depended on it. But when things need to be done and they just finally, I just got to do it. Just jump out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's So I think I have at least an obtuse understanding of what you're describing.
Well, I had cut the stair pattern out of plywood and then put the solid plywood in 2x4s. It's just a two step because it's only about a foot or so, maybe a little higher.
But you put all those lovely tools there in the man cave into action, right?
Oh yeah, skill saw, fiber saw, two drill motors, a lot of drilling and screwing with the long. Like the extra.
Couldn't resist that, could you?
Well, it changed the subject. I could have called them screw guns, but I thought, no, I better not.
Well, yeah, under the circumstances, probably, yeah. And we don't want to give anybody any ideas.
They're actually cordless drills. Couldn't do my job without a cordless drill. But it's kind of nice. I don't get to build much anymore.
Well, that's just a matter of you haven't been struck by the whim now, have you? Well, let's check in with some of the other denizens of the roundtable. Good evening, Rick.
Hey, good evening, Bob. How's it going?
Good. Concert report? Any cakes melting in the rain or anything?
I got all kinds of things to report. My biggest problem right now is I'm trying to figure out where to take my date tonight. I'm trying to find a live music that has good dancing music. So there's a few possibilities here, so I'm still kind of like scrambling around. But I had like six dates in 6 days. It was pretty crazy, Bob. And two last Sunday, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. I do have a concert report. Judy Collins, she sang on Friday night, and just absolutely brilliant. I mean, you know, she's like a year younger than my mom. She's like 76, and she still hits all the notes and just funny as hell. Talks about how she, was never into drugs in the 60s because it interfered with her drinking, you know, and stuff like that. But, she was a real neat lady, and I had a great date. I had a really good time. And, just kind of set a blanket out and took her shoes and socks off and just kind of kicked back. And it was actually a great show to take a date to, a great, great show for a first date. So I had a blast.
Awesome.
Yeah, and afterwards I actually got to sort of meet Judy. I mean, not like she had people around, but so I, we sort of talked a little bit. I made a comment like, hey, I've had a crush on you since I was 15. And the people around kind of chuckled, you know. But
yeah, as long as she didn't look sidelong out of one eye and go, security!
Yeah, no, she didn't. She did. No, she was very gracious and, you know, very, seems like a really neat lady. And, I mean, it just sort of blurs together when you go on so many dates, you know. You forget who you told what to whom, you know.
Well, I mean, hopefully you haven't reached the point where that's a problem yet.
I mean, a real problem.
Just, you know.
No, of course not. No. I know what you're saying. No, it's not a real problem. But what else did I do? And I did something Saturday. Oh, we got rain 2 days in a row last weekend, Bob. My Saturday night concert, the Motels, Martha Davis and the Motels and Mickey Thomas of Starship got rained out. So I just had dinner that night with my date, and that was okay. And then they rescheduled the concert, I think, for the next day. But by then I'd been invited to see a jazz singer from New York at the Catalina Jazz Club by an actual jazz singer. So we had our first date on Sunday, which was really nice, and And then we had a second date just last night at Vitello's. That was the famous restaurant where Bonnie Lee Bakley had her last supper with Robert Blake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. But they have really fabulous Italian food there. And then I had another date on Tuesday night. I had some sushi. So, you know, the entertainment budget is like way beyond busted at this point, but I'm having a good time.
Well, what was your okay? So I got to ask, what was your sushi choice?
What's that?
What was your sushi choice?
Oh, what the heck was it? You know, she asked.
You said California roll. We're bouncing you out of the room, okay? I mean,
No, I didn't do California roll. No, I had a tuna roll. And she ordered, like, something more like sashimi, like not with not a lot of rice and stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, she knew her sushi better than I did, you know?
What you got to do, you need to get in touch with Tracy, because driving cab like Tracy does, she knows where all the awesome food trucks are. And somewhere
right
out there, there's a shrimp taco to die for, I'm told.
Oh, well, you know, outside of our office building, we have a food truck every day of the week during the work week. And it's like advertised, like, you know, I think on the, you know, maybe Friday before the week coming up. And yeah, we have some pretty good stuff, pretty good trucks coming by. You know, it used to be, in the old days, you'd call those the roach coaches, but I think they've become much upgraded.
No. Like, food trucks are the hippest way to eat in America now, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, like at these events that you have, like, you know, like at the free concert at Pershing Square, for example, that got rained out, there would have been a bunch of food trucks there, for example, you know. You know, anything from sliders to, you know, tacos to, I mean, who knows what. So I'm glad you're feeling better, Bob. I heard your program on Wednesday, and you were having a hypoglycemic attack. That is definitely
No, that was one of the worst ones I've had in a while, because it took the better part of a day to get over.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't just get my sugar back up. I got it too high, then it had to come back down and stabilize. But it just screws with you, and it's really weird for me to see my sugar fall to 60.
Wow. Do those just kind of come out of the blue on you, or what happens?
Yeah, they
exactly?
do. Yeah, they do. I mean, I've been hypoglycemic since I was a child.
Wow.
Of course, back
okay.
when I was a child, nobody was going, well, that's hypoglycemia. I kind of wish they had.
Mm-hmm.
We just knew that I would get the shakes and the sweats, and then I had to eat a Reese's cup or a peanut butter and cracker or whatever.
Right. That's it.
And I guess
you have to eat a lot of small meals, right? Don't you? If you're
hypoglycemic. Yeah, you just kind of have to nosh all along.
Right.
I mean, I wonder. I'm finally going to an endocrinologist at the end of the month, and we're going to hopefully, we're going to have a meaningful conversation, because I'm not taking I'm not insulin dependent by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, that's good.
And they started me out on, oh God, it's, what is it? Like 2 1,500 milligram, metformins once in the morning and once in the evening. Well, that was just unmanageable. So we knocked back to one a day, and that may even be too much.
One a day for what?
Well, it's metformin. It's glucophage. It's a relatively benign drug that's been around for a long, long time that really does its job quite well.
Okay.
But, oddly enough, when I had the gut attack a couple of weeks ago, when they did the CT scan on me, they used the contrast and told me that I was absolutely absolutely don't take your metformin for 2 days after that. So I decided just to be extra careful that I wouldn't take my metformin for a good week.
Oh.
And so I didn't, and I monitored my blood sugar religiously, and it just stayed normal.
Huh.
And then I got back on it, and, well, what happened the other night happened the other night.
Huh.
And so, I don't know how it works for other people who have hypoglycemic events, but when it goes, I mean, it just saps you. There's just nothing to you. You're just whipped. And for a few hours after, you're a while coming back from it.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's really serious. You gotta always have something handy to eat.
Oh, they've got these little glucose tablets and these little, they come in the same kind of bottles. It's like the 5-hour energy. You just boop.
Right.
And it'll start boosting you back up and it gets back into your system. But the thing is, if you're burning it like that, then, and I mean, obviously, my pancreas works.
Right.
But the thing is, after you get the glucose in you, then you have to get some protein going too. And that's really the key. And I don't know, you know, if by some modern miracle, no, it would just be me getting off my ass and doing a little more exercise. But if I could knock, 40, 50 pounds off of me, hell, I might not even be diabetic anymore. Because I'm just, I'm borderline right now.
Right. Right. So you're type 2, right?
I think, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's adult onset. Yeah. Huh. But hypoglycemia is your main issue. You're not insulin dependent. Well, that's good. I mean, you know, that I think that means that you have, you know, it's not quite as severe as it would be if you were insulin dependent.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I watched my dad do the insulin shots twice a day, and I just really don't ever want to do that.
Yeah, no, I watched my grandmother go through dialysis and, you know, all sorts of stuff and an amputation from dropping a frozen orange juice can on her foot and, you know, nasty things. She went blind, and, you know. So, yeah, you want to avoid anything like that if at all possible, you know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, tell you what, let me let somebody else have the floor here, Bob, for a while, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
We'll move over. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Bob.
Some call him Tim.
Yes.
What's happening?
Oh, not much. I wish it was still raining again. I like the rain. Couple days ago, they actually dropped down to like 70 degrees, and I was like, wow, it feels good. We actually had rain. And I also found out on the 10th freeway out here, a bridge collapsed, so we have no connection in Southern California, LA area, Riverside, between here and Arizona. But if you head south to like San Diego, the 8, you can still go from California to Arizona. And I was like, yay, Arizona can't come to us, or we can't go to them. But yeah, it actually rained, and actually rained really hard.
So wait. So you get, I'm looking in the chat room at the same time, Tim. You get hypoglycemic too?
Yeah.
And so what's this comment? Drink more booze, Bob. I'm interested. Yeah, Tell me more.
Yeah, that's more of a joke, though. I mean, alcohol converts into sugar, so if you need more sugar in your body.
I read an interesting story the other day somewhere out on the internet, so you know, that means it must necessarily be true, because you know, everything on the internet's true. But they've identified some sort of chemical inside not any booze, but just inside tequila that lowers blood sugar.
Yeah, but you don't want to lower blood sugar if you're hypoglycemic.
Well, no, but I'm also diabetic. I'm type 2.
Ah. Well, I'm not diabetic. I think I produce too much insulin. Because I remember I was at my parents' place and I passed out and I'm like, oh shit, what happened?
I was, you know, after everything was diagnosed and I told them I'd been hypoglycemic all month, they said, well, that's just an indicator you're probably going to be diabetic. So keep an eye on it.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been like this since I was a kid, though. So my parents would give me like
oranges. So you had the same thing going on, third grade, come in from the playground and just sweat, shaking, no energy,
dizzy.
Sleepy.
Yeah, yeah. And I was skinny. Well, back then, I was like skinny for all the way through. So, had the physical. Doctor said everything's fine. They back then they didn't even know what hypoglycemia was. And they just said, oh, he's probably just tired or, well, I don't know, because they knew basically what hyperglycemia, you know, well, the opposite of hypoglycemia, hypoglycemic was. But they didn't know, being a diabetic, but they didn't know what hypoglycemia was. So they just said, well, if you're kind of tired, eat a candy bar.
There in California, the state of medical science was roughly the same as it was in Alabama. Well, just make sure you keep a package of crackers around.
So my mom gave me like apples and oranges and, you know, different fruits. Cause she said, I don't like, want you to eat candy bars and whatever. So I'm like, oh, okay.
We had very similar mothers.
Yeah.
Well, you mom was like,
cause I didn't grow up eating candy bars. And I guess that helped a lot too. Cause I don't eat a whole lot of candy anyway. I really don't like it, but. I'll eat like a mango, papaya, an apple, an orange.
My cousin gave me a recipe the other day. It's for these marinated chicken breast chunk skewers that you do on the grill with a mango pineapple salsa on the side.
Ooh.
I can't wait. It is so going to happen. You mentioning a mango kind of.
Okay. Yeah, so that's what I do. Man, just imagine that. We're almost similar, but I hate raw fish. And you know
we're going to get you in touch with your heritage. We're going to take care of that, Tim.
Yeah, no way, man. Oh, I hate that stuff. So I had sashimi and tuna. I'm like, ugh. Yes, Rick, I don't like raw fish. You're more Japanese than I am. So is Bob. Like what Mike says.
Yeah, it's honorary Japanese of the horn, I guess.
Both of you guys are. And I'm sure there's other people inside here who eat raw fish, too.
Yeah.
Okay, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa up in Vancouver has filled in a blank. The compound in tequila that lowers blood sugar is called an agavin, A-G-A-V-I-N, which is not the same as angevins, which were a bunch of useless royals in medieval Europe. Agavins, A-G-A-V-I-N, named after, of course, the agave plant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because Asa and I are both tequila devotees, and he saw the story, too.
Ah. You should come down to East L.A. Even though when you come out here, we should get some tequila.
We are. And the other, you know, the other thing I promised myself is that, Greg in San Diego and I are going to go and we're going to drink pulque at that one restaurant in San Diego that has it. Or as it was known in the hot, the drunk making Oakley. It's fermented Maguey juice. Maguey, I don't know. Do you pronounce the G? Who knows? But apparently,
are you going to get it from a bar that's regulated by the U.S. or are you going to go hop? You know, go.
Oh no, no, no. There's a. I found a restaurant in San Diego that has it imported from Mexico daily.
And it's not stepped down because of federal regulations and whatnot.
Well, I mean, it's just whether it be wine, beer, mead, pulque, corn beer, what have you. Just by the nature of yeast, just doing what yeasts do, you're never going to get anything more than like 15% alcohol or so. I mean, the whole reason for distillation, let's remember our Arabic friends invented that. Back when my European ancestors were fighting with the buzzards for what the wolves didn't want, to make whiskey, you know, you start off by making a beer. So it's called a beer. And all the beer goes into the, is what goes into the still. And the still eliminates, the still produces, it takes all the alcohol out. And what's left over is what's left over. I'm really, really just annoying the hell out of people who know their chemistry right now, Tim. But that, you know, you're distilling the alcohol out of the yeast fermented beverage. But yeasts can only survive depending on their particular genetic strain. They can only survive up to around 15, 16, 17% alcohol tops. And then they just die because, you know, basically yeasts eat sugar and pee alcohol. Alcohol is yeast pee.
Oh, okay.
If you
could. Which leads me to this question then for you, Bob. You know, the highest level we could probably have or be sold is 151, which is from cane sugar, you know, cane alcohol. Or
well, there was 151. I mean, I remember, doesn't Bacardi still sell Bacardi 151?
Yeah, 151.
It used to be you could buy, and the name brand was Everclear, and it was 200
right.
proof. That meant it was 100% grain alcohol, but then... idiots at college parties started dying because they tried to drink it like liquor, and it will kill you quick.
Right.
But that was what went into all the party punches.
Right. So then, 151, if 151 is the highest you can legally possess, you know, they drink down in Mexico, well, do you think they'll step it down then? Because... if they sell it across, you know, from Mexico to the U.S. or because of regulations.
Well, no, the pulque doesn't have to be stepped down because it's just a yeast fermented beverage. It's not distilled.
Oh, okay.
But it's kind of slimy. I guess that's one, or it's thickish. We tend to forget in. Well, for instance, when the Romans first started having contact with the Germanic peoples, they mm-hmm. were, you know, the Romans were wine drinkers. Now, the Egyptians were beer drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Egyptians actually would make beer, and they would flavor it with the castor berry, which is also what you use to make castor oil and ricin. But in modest amounts, it added flavor. And the Egyptians were beer drinkers. The Romans, though, wine drinkers, big time. And they were horrified by two things when they met the Germanic peoples. One, the fact that the Germanic peoples made butter, which they found disgusting because they preferred olive oil. And the other was beer. Now the Germanic peoples also made wine, and it was of such a quality that at one point the Romans even banned wine, German wines being brought into the empire, because everybody liked it better than the Roman stuff. And by wine, we're not talking about wine such as you and I know, because it was really hard to keep an age for very long at all. But it was still, you know, it was alcohol, and you know, there's mm-hmm. that. Well, I mean, you know your Bible. What's that reference in there about not putting new wine in old skins or new skins or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Because it'll blow the bag up. The new wine is still working.
And that's why fermentation is in wood and not skin.
Right. And then of course and of course they did most of their fermentation in amphorae, you know, clay pots, big clay pots.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean that's how we think about fermented beverages generally. As usual, as with everything else, if the Europeans didn't do it, we don't know. But of course, there's date palm wine, for which the Arabic peoples were notably famous. And then, of course, there's all, you know, God knows what, there's a million different kinds of sake, right?
Yeah.
There's the sake you drink cold, the sake you drink warm, and the plum wines and all of that stuff. Well, in the New World, you had all kinds of different fermented beverages, too. In Peru, I mean, you know, I'm never going to travel like I want to travel, but there was the ocli, which the Spanish called pulque. Then down in Peru and in other parts of Mexico, there were corn-based beers, all kinds of stuff. And most of it is still made.
Hmm.
Oh, and by the way, did I tell you? Did I tell you when I? You know, we went to the while I was in the D.C. area, we went to the big international market in Manassas, and I have fresh, not dried, fresh buckwheat soba.
Ooh.
So now I'm gonna.
I love soba.
So now I'm on a mission, Tim. I have found the recipe, and now I have to find the stuff to do it with, that cold summertime soba dish.
Oh, well, all you need is the noodle, and boil the noodle, and you get the soba sauce, and you just dip, you know, I guess my mom boils it, and then cools it down, and put, like, you know, when you have the soba, you mix it with water, because it's kind of, you know, strong, so you do it, you set it for taste. You drop a couple ice cubes inside, get the noodles, dip it into the sauce, and eat it.
It's the sauce that's proving a challenge. Let me see here. I found it. There was actually a name for it. Hold on. Dang it. It was. It seems like it started with. The word start. It was something soba. And I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. We're just having an extended food porn here, aren't we?
Are you talking about like chia? Soba chia?
Oh, dang it.
Sadu soba.
Yeah, it was, I swear it started with an R, and now I can't find it.
Starts with an R. The soup?
Yeah. Or the sauce.
I mean, there's chiu.
Hey, wait. Cold. Okay.
I mean, different.
Saru. I knew there was an R in there somewhere. Saru.
Oh, Saru soba.
Yeah, okay.
And you don't have to dilute it. You don't have to dilute it with water. You just put it inside the bowl and drop inside it. Drop an ice. Ooh, that looks so
good. Well, but see, the dipping sauce calls for mentsuyu.
Suyu, yeah.
Mentsuyu and dashi stock. And I'm kind of lost. Let's see.
You know, I'm not going to ask my mom.
Homemade mentsuyu. Mentsuyu.
Yeah, I can ask my mom.
Tsukitsuyu.
Of course,
it's a video. Oh, there it is. Sake, and another thing I don't know what it is. Mirin, M-I-R-I-N.
Yeah.
And soy sauce and kombu. And katsubushi.
Oh, kombu is seaweed.
Okay, that's what I thought. 1 cup of packed katsubushi.
Oh, yeah. Mirin is like sake, rice wine.
Okay, yeah, it says sake.
It has a lower alcohol content and higher sugar contents.
Okay. And it's one link after another, so now I got to find out what katsuobushi is. But I'm determined to have this before the... dried, fermented, and smoked skipjack tuna.
Oh, that's, skipjack tuna? No, I don't know. What is that?
Fish flakes!
Mean? Oh, that's, No, not bonita. Yeah, bonita!
Yeah.
And they look like little fingers.
So with any luck at all, I'll get down to Charleston because we've got a little teeny tiny international market down there. And that's where I always have to go to pick up my Indian farafa and naan. And maybe they'll have all that because I'm hell-bent on having that in, well, preferably the warm weather of August.
Oh, it'll be awesome. You eat that, and it tastes great. And dice up some, cut up some green onions too, you know, like in little tiny circles or whatever. Just go,
yeah.
And you put it on top of your soup and eat with that. It seems like the.
So you just take up a bunch of the noodles in your chopsticks and dip them in the sauce and have at it.
Yep, and just flip them away.
Well, I'm starving. I don't think we'll have to worry about my blood sugar after that meal, though. I mean, the sake's sweetened, the mirin's sweetened. Yeah. And the
noodles is the noodles also carbohydrate.
Right. And the nice thing is these are cold noodles and they've been kept refrigerated, so I mean they're not dried, they're fresh. So I'm really looking forward to it. And then I'll work on hot soba. Well, I lost the group somehow. You there, Sparky? Apparently Agent Fred doesn't like soba. Who knew? In the chat room, Richard, Bob, where will you get the noodles? Richard, I've already got the noodles. I found buckwheat soba and I jumped on it like a duck on a June bug. The sake goes into the sauce, Marty.
Sorry, Bob, my internet hiccuped.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought Agent Fred didn't like soba or something.
He might not have.
But I'm
my router has fits sometimes, you know, all of a sudden.
Oh, and I'm getting a little correction here. Randy in PA says Everclear was 180 proof because above that, pure alcohol will steal water vapor from the air to make it 180 proof. Randy says, I tried out for chemical engineering in college, but I just didn't have the knack for it. Oh, by the way, for anybody interested, I finished Between the World and Me, the book by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and I recommend it to anybody as almost required reading in the midst of, you know, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Sandra Bland. It's a beautiful, it's 152 Kindle pages, and it was magnificent from start to finish. No, Tim, that wasn't your phone dying. That was Sparky accidentally lightsabered all of us. Is Larry able to talk and hear yet?
I think he is.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Tim. Are you there, Larry?
Yes, I was here. Thank you very much. I have sound.
Glory, hallelujah. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Well, I've missed the last few minutes, so I'll have to catch up on that.
No, just jump right in. I mean, it's a free-for-all. It's Friday on the front porch.
Okay, well, one of my DJ friends that was doing work on Calx when I was there, KALX is the UC Berkeley radio station, moved over to KPFA and then was part of a band called Negative Land, passed away. So that's sad, from heart failure. He was 71 years old, and it was probably, to my mind, one of the most creative disc jockeys that could put together segues and music like you wouldn't believe from a widely disparate group of musics. He was also an artist, so he was not only a palette with his art, it not only created great, you know, artistic and visual palettes, but also great sound palettes, and I'll miss him a lot. He was a really nice man. And so I found out about that today. And other than that, I'm trying to piece together what's going on in the news, trying to figure out what's happening with that whole thing in Texas with that cop and what he did to that woman.
Well, here, shall we cut to the chase then?
Yes.
My personal opinion is they killed Sandra Bland, and now they'll get away with it. Interestingly, I had a note from our buddy Roger out in Oregon earlier this morning, and he shared some information. He said, a couple of thoughts on unseen portions in the Sandra Bland video. Because, see, that's where all the questions come from. One, why did he walk her out of view of the dash cam? And two, what went on there? Roger said, a couple of points I haven't heard mentioned yet in the Sandra Bland case. One, since it was the male in uniform's attitude that changed after he returned from checking her info, I surmise that he improperly did a Google search on her information and found her Black Lives Matter activism history and decided she needed to be put in her place. At this point, he was just doing the James Beauregard Crow thing, trying to provoke a response so the greater charge can be levied. James Beauregard Crow, Jim Crow, get it? When he walks her out of frame, he was likely tried to grope and fondle her, triggering a reactionary kick. That he does this going off camera so automatically indicates that doing so is probably SOP nowadays when someone is anticipating doing something improper. Three, once incarcerated, it must have been determined that the victim must be discredited and have trumped-up charges filed. Putting some marijuana in a prisoner's food so that they will later test positive was initially intended to be able to trump up the charge to include DUI, inferentially, since the standard tests don't tell how long or how much since exposure to cannabis. A proper autopsy and homicide investigation should be able to say whether her lungs indicate recent heavy concentration inhalation of marijuana smoke. My two cents, says Roger. And I think all of those things are worthy of consideration.
My understanding is that he was tailing her, and she got out of the way of his car to let him go by, and then he stopped her.
Yeah, that's all available in the video that you can see online. He's tailing her. And in fact, he's tailgating her.
All right, but why does he get out of the car and then say, "You seem to be upset. Are you upset?" And she is honest with him and says,
"Well, one,
yes, I'm upset."
One, okay, back up here because we talked about a little bit of this last night. One, the run up and fall back is a known dirty cop tactic because it'll make the average driver slip up and do something wrong, creating probable cause for the stop. And in her case, it worked because she tried to get out of his way. But in so doing, she changed lanes without making her little turn signal go blinky blinky.
Uh-huh.
So that created the probable cause for the stop. Then when he walks up to her and says, "You seem upset," well, the "you seem upset" triggers all kinds of stuff. Reason to be suspicious, fear for officer safety. And officer safety is always the go-to for anything that you want to try to get away with. I mean, the woman's getting pulled over for failure to signal and winds up in handcuffs, according to his report, for officer safety. What, she was a ninja?
She wasn't doing anything except smoking a cigarette in the car.
Right, and that's another point. You know, this country has become so rabidly anti-tobacco. I mean, I remember my one and only trip to San Francisco when folks who knew the area said, "Listen, man, if you're going to smoke, get out close to the street. Don't just be smoking on the sidewalk because the cops will have at you for it. Now, if you're smoking a joint, they'll leave you alone." And lo and behold, it was true. But so, you know, secondhand smoke and all of that stuff. So, you know, why are you smoking? Put out your cigarette. And you know, he can do that because that's a threat to officer. Secondhand smoke is a threat to officer safety.
Well, how come it's hard for me to be able to see all these various factors, and then what are the most important factors that I need to look at? And what I see is that this man just manhandled this woman. He just dragged her out of the car.
We don't know. We don't know. I mean, he gets her out of the car. He threatens to taser. But all the stuff where she's hollering, you're banging my head, I've got epilepsy, all of that stuff is off camera.
Yes.
And don't think for a minute that the cops don't know the width of the viewfinder on the camera. And he doesn't have a body cam, by God. All he has is a mic. And so he knows he's off screen.
Oh. So all this stuff is going through his head all the time.
It's not necessarily going through his head. It's just, it's stuff that he knows. It's stuff that, you know, he wasn't, like I said last night, Larry, this wasn't something they trained him on at the academy. This is stuff that old cops tell young cops. You know, how to cop.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, and I don't, you know, and I'm increasingly upset with people that want to give cops alibis or want to try to look at the situation from the point of view of the cop and try to look for the reasons why the cop might have done what he, well, like my friends in San Diego, for instance.
Well, because fascism, Larry.
Yeah, like,
I mean, are you familiar with the, and granted, this didn't wind up with anybody dead, mercifully, but are you familiar with the cop story out of New York from a couple of days ago?
Not from a couple of days ago, no, not from a couple of days ago.
Okay, so a guy named Thomas Jennings walks into a little, I'd call it a convenience store, it's called a grocery store in the news story, and he's minding his own business in the grocery store when two NYPD cops show up, and he's holding his hands up, okay? He's got his hands up in the air. Now, they suspect him of stealing two slices of pizza from a local pizza joint down the street. He didn't. But he's a 24-year-old man, Thomas Jennings, has his hands up. He's leaning on the counter at the grocery store. It's in Brooklyn. It's on July the 7th. And that's when NYPD officer Lenny Lutchman comes up behind him and starts shoving him in the chest and grabbing his wrist. And he raises his hands. 24-year-old Thomas Jennings raises his hands in surrender. And that's when Officer Pierce Martinez comes up, just runs in. Nothing, no, there's no pushback, there's no resisting, and begins to punch Thomas Jennings in the head. Didn't Ooh. Slow down, didn't break stride, puts a right-handed punch right into his head, and then just keeps punching him. And then the other officer starts punching him, too, and beating him with the baton.
But, all right, I'm going to ask a dumb question here or a silly question, but why are all these people out here who are saying, well, those people are just the small minority of bad cops, and the majority of cops do their jobs well, and you shouldn't really come down on the few cops that are, and yes, they need to be trained.
And what's your question?
Why do they, you know, people want to make excuses for cop behavior?
Because the cops are doing the bidding of the majority in this country. At some sickening level, this country likes what the cops do, as long as it's not them it's being done to. You know, this Thomas Jennings here, in his mugshot, his right eye is completely swollen shut. They kept him in jail for 7 days, charging him with robbery. But after 7 days, prosecutors let him go because they weren't willing to present the case to a grand jury because they knew the grand jury would... And, you know, it's easy to get an indictment from a grand jury, but he wasn't guilty of anything.
Well, you know, and then my friends here who were, you know, when I mentioned this before, and the, you know, they were defending, well, they weren't really defending the police officer Manuel Ramos in Fullerton that beat up and put the schizophrenic guy in a coma, but they said, well, everybody has, you know, there is always a way for somebody to deal with something in a way that they don't have to get beaten up by police officers. And if they, you know, people always have a choice. And I look at that and I say, that's, and you were saying at the time, those people are either very, very liberal or very, very fascist or very conservative. So, you know, I mean, I don't think that there was any excuse for this Manuel Ramos and these other cops in Fullerton to beat up this guy in 2011 who had schizophrenia. I don't think there was any excuse for it. And to try to say that the guy who had schizophrenia could have ultimately kept from being killed if he just, you know, just sort of gave up or something.
Giving up is no guarantee. I mean, this guy in New York, Thomas Jennings, had his hands up, and they just beat the daylights out of him.
Well, every police force in the entire country needs to be retrained somehow in terms of learning, you know, I don't know whether it means community policing. I don't know if it means learning that people are innocent until they're proven guilty. I don't know if it means that that the cops should always assume that the people that they're dealing with.
I don't know. Maybe we look at other countries and how they do it. No, because of course the right wing would have a hissy about that, Larry. Yeah, because I mean, well, we can't be considering foreign law. But like I said, why am I echoing?
Oh, probably because it's me.
The police in Germany, in the entire nation, discharged their weapons 85 times last year. That's tomorrow in, you know, one state, maybe, in the United States. In Germany, in Sweden, the cops are not just agents of out-of-control violence, which they are in the United States. But, Larry, you gotta understand, buddy. This country likes it this way. We like for people to get the hell beat out of them by the cops. As long as it's not, you know, us. We like it. It makes us feel safe.
Well, you know, it's like, well, the cop has a right to protect themselves. Well, if the cop...
No.
You know.
No! We like for the cops to beat the shit out of people in this country. We like it.
Yeah.
Not because the officer has a right to protect himself.
No.
We like for cops to beat the shit out of people because it keeps people in line. Supposedly.
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't know where this place was in Texas. It was in where Prairie View A&M
Waller County
University is. But this woman seemed like a really nice, you know, really cool woman, and it just leaves a very, very bad taste.
Mute, Larry.
Sorry.
I think the best take on it comes from the founders of Black Lives Matter. They said it plain and simple. They were on Democracy Now. They were appearing live from Cleveland. And they said that Sandra Bland didn't commit suicide. She was a victim of state violence. And I see nothing that convinces me otherwise. Larry, if you want to read a really good analysis of so many of the things that are wrong with the Sandra Bland case, go to the New York Times website and read Charles Blow's column. I read it in its entirety on air last night. There are so many sickening holes in this that it's almost intolerable to read.
Well, it seems like it's just a cracker cop who doesn't like African Americans who found a way to go and
well, we've got to be careful. We've got to be careful with that word cracker. It's just a bad cop. As Patrice Cullors said on Democracy Now, there's a significant amount of beatings that happen in county jails. And so you've seen this in Los Angeles County. You've seen this in New York. You've seen this in Chicago and now in Waller County. This isn't new, unfortunately, and Sandy was a victim of state violence. I mean, the nerve, the pure brass of stating that she consumed large amounts of marijuana while in a jail cell. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's like saying that she was shot trying to escape. This is an offensive level of mendacity that's straight out of the movies. I presume at some point you've seen Casablanca and the Nazi colonel there after Ugarte is killed. The Nazi colonel says, "Yes, we have not yet decided whether he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape." This is that. And for anybody wanting a little better sense of geographic placement, just got an email from Marty. Marty says, Prairie View A&M, where she had taken a job, is approximately 20 miles north-northwest from my parents' home in Cypress, Texas, about an hour out of Houston proper. And that's a different, and Texans will tell you, there's different Texases. Austin ain't Houston, and Houston ain't Dallas, and Dallas ain't San Antonio. But any way you slice it, it's intolerable. The case is full of holes, and the one thing we know more than anything else is that everything, even if this turns out to be dirty, everything will be done possible to protect the cop. Just is what it is.
All I know is I visited Texas once. I ain't going back.
Texas Betsy tells me that Texas A&M Prairie View is a traditionally black college and probably the most respected of the historically black colleges in Texas. And she was going back, and she had graduated from there. It was her alma mater, and she was going back there to take a job. And she was almost there. And they killed her. Mark, if you go back to the podcast from last night, Larry, Mark has a history in law enforcement, experience in law enforcement. You know, that Illinois tag on the back of her car was a dead giveaway. That was an invitation to mess with her. Just like if I drove to Texas, my West Virginia tag would say, "Screw with this guy." Although I get a couple of points in my favor just out of white privilege. Is it beginning to get a little clearer for you, Larry?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I think I'm pretty angry at my friends for for trying to mess with my head about the whole thing about cops. You know, I just...
Well, no, I mean, but look, it's true. They're not all bad. But we have no way in this country of policing the police. So-called internal affairs departments are useless. We need a nationwide network of public prosecutors whose own, you know, they never work with the police. They never prosecute any police cases, because that's what makes the whole thing so impossible in large part. Prosecutors, I mean, look, the Michael Brown case is a classic case in point. The prosecutor was, the deputy chair or the chairman of the police benevolent fundraising fund funding thing. And, of course, he deals with all the law enforcement cases, all the criminal cases the police bring. So for him to prosecute one of his own, well, that's just going to mean that the cops won't trust him anymore. And if you bring in a special prosecutor, well, she works with cops in another district, and if she works over a cop in a special prosecutor situation, well, the cops back home won't trust her anymore because they think, you know, she might roll on them. So there's no way to adequately police the police. We need a nationwide network of public prosecutors who never touch any criminal cases except criminal cases involving police. And their only job is to investigate crimes committed by police. I would suggest it would take a federal law to create a federal force who would then be empowered with a single office or two or three in every state. Some would say, well, that's what the U.S. attorney should be doing, but the U.S. attorney doesn't. And every state should empower that prosecutor to bring indictments before grand juries so that you can't get a filthy little fix job like what happened in St. Louis County. Anything else? And it just goes... But then again, that's like positing a nationwide fix for all this godforsaken gun violence. We can talk about it. There are relatively straightforward solutions. But you have to realize that and I'm not trying to be a nihilist or a negativist. I just happen to live where I live, and I live with my eyes open, and you know, my address is Bob Kincaid, Reality Land. Gun violence, we are not going to do a damned thing about it. And we're not going to do a damn thing about the cops either. Not until there is sufficient public pressure. I mean, but my God, the American people supported by something like 80% background checks at firearms flea markets. And the Senate and the House both said, fuck you to the American people. So what does that tell you? I mean, don't... If I'm being unnecessarily negative, for God's sakes, tell me. But if I'm reflecting reality, I'd appreciate knowing that, too. Rick, I mean, you know, you're the Perry Mason of the group.
Yes, I am, Bob. How are you?
I'm okay, but I mean, am I saying anything untrue?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so at all. That's the whole problem with police brutality, official misconduct like this, we really do need a national prosecutor, and because of the fractured nature of our political system right now, and also just the nature of federalism, I don't really see that happening now, or, you know, I don't know if we'd ever see it happen, to tell you the truth. Hate to be a pessimist, but, you know.
Well, I mean, can you imagine, say, Alabama passing a law through the legislature and the governor signing it into law, that says that the federal government shall have the right to appoint a prosecutor who in turn shall have a right to present cases before a grand jury in any county in Alabama?
No.
Not a federal grand jury.
Yeah, state grand jury. No, we would sooner see, you know, snowballs in hell than we would see that happen, Bob, to tell you the truth, you know?
So that leaves you with federal court.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to do it somehow.
But a federal court can't hear state jurisdiction cases. I mean,
no.
Murder, for instance. Now, a federal court can hear a violation of civil rights case. And, you know, there's been an indictment of Dylan Roof over that.
Right.
But murder? Except for a very narrow set of circumstances, like, you know, Timothy McVeigh blew up a federal building. That triggered federal jurisdiction.
Right.
But a state police officer or a local, a city police officer, what have you, committing a crime? Well, the U.S. attorney cannot charge a violation of, say, I don't know, Texas Penal Code 401-2-5, then I'm just making it up, murder.
Yeah, no.
He can't charge that in federal court because there's
absolutely
no federal
not.
Jurisdiction.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think what you'd have to do is you'd have to create a crime, you know, sort of like the, you know, violation of civil rights under color of law. Well, I guess that is already a crime. That's really... You know,
well, see, I would go a different route. I'd go a different route. I would create a federal statute that, or maybe an amendment to the Constitution even. I mean, I don't know. This is one of those really knotty K-N-O-T-T-Y problems. Create a federal constitutional amendment, statute, whatever was necessary, saying that the federal courts can have, and grand juries in federal courts can have, jurisdiction over state law violations. So that if you've got plain old, you know, most states follow some version of, at the very base, it's plain old garden variety common law murder, plain old garden variety common law rape, plain old garden variety common law arson. And that federal courts can hear those state claims. So then you could present it to a federal grand jury, and it could be tried before a federal judge, and the right honorable judge, good old boy, who wants to cover the cop's ass, is SOL, right? Because I can't imagine a federal prosecutor trying to charge state statutory murder in front of Judge Good Old Boy, because he's got to be elected. And he's got to go back to the people. I'm tough on crime. Well, what about that? You know, what about that hardworking police officer you set up for life? Have I lost you guys?
No, we're here.
No.
Okay.
Some people are having audio issues.
Oh, okay. Well, Rick and I were talking, and then I didn't hear any more from Rick.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, what about like you said, murder? You know, obviously, murder is a state crime, but and there's a few exceptions like interstate flight, and maybe a serial killer. But what about under the color of law?
Well, I mean, that's there. You know, a constitutional rights violation. But the problem is that when you add elements to a crime, you make the proving of the crime more difficult. For instance, the difference between embezzlement and, say, grand larceny. In the state, grand larceny is the stealing, taking, and carrying away of the goods, property, or holdings of another of a value of $1,000 or more. So you got to prove. On the other hand, embezzlement, there's, you know, elements, you know, it's got to be a bank, and it's got to be this, and it's got to be this, and every time you add an element, you add another thing that the state has to prove that, and every time there's another thing the state has to prove, there's another thing for the defense to pick, chip away at. So, to argue under color of state law, or under color of law, like, you know, a civil rights violation, you can do that, but you still got to trigger the federal jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the U.S. Attorney's offices, I mean, remember, the U.S. Attorney was going to investigate whether or not Michael Brown's civil rights were violated. Ha! How's that working out with Eric Garner? How about Tamir Rice? How about Walter Scott? Oh, and remember the U.S. Attorney was going to investigate the killing of Trayvon Martin, too. I'm still waiting for that trial to open.
Yeah. Bob, Timmy was saying, I hope Timmy doesn't mind my mentioning, Timmy was typing in the chat that, but the cops in Fullerton were found not guilty. What then? And I'm
too bad. You lose. Go home.
But those cops beat up.
Yeah, but they're still not guilty.
But
because the system
are guilty.
No, they're not. The system is rigged in the cops' favor.
Well, like OJ, he's not guilty. I mean, he was guilty of robbery in Nevada, but I mean, not murder in California. You could have all the evidence you want. You could have all the, you know, the proof, all the cameras, the video. But they're found not guilty in court. They're not guilty. I'm not saying OJ or any of those guys are innocent. They're just not guilty.
Well,
I mean, and then there's the doctrine of preemption. The federal government can preempt just about any subject it wants to. And say that, you know, we're going to establish a national standard on this. And they have from time to time. For instance, we don't have 50 separate FCCs, right? And the old Confederacy would go absolutely hog damn wild and you thought they threw a hissy over Jade Helm and Agenda 21. Boy.
Well, you know, I don't think Mumia is ever going to get a fair trial. And, you know, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I don't think Leonard Peltier is ever going to get a fair trial. And, which upsets me to no end. But I'm told that they're probably never going to get, you know, I mean, they're probably going to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal.
No, they're both going to, Leonard Peltier and Mumia are both going to die in prison. Period.
And, you know, I don't know what's in it for the government to do that, to do those.
Because it's messaging, Larry. It's messaging.
Well, you know, Bob, another thing I thought of, I haven't heard it talked about yet, I think, is the cops are actively trying to cover up what's going on. So it takes a lot of investigation. You know, you can't just get the police report and just look at it and say, you know, you gotta spend some time, and they're not going to do that. You know, or they don't have the resources, I think.
No, the life of Sandra Bland is not worth that. And God forbid somebody was new to this program and heard me say that. What a jerk he is. I'm not saying that her life is not worth that. I'm saying that in the larger social scheme of things, this country does not think her life is worth that. Just like this country didn't think Michael Brown's life was worth that. Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Eric Garner. Okay? It's the whole reason that the Black Lives Matter movement exists. By the way, hi Jack. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Somebody, anybody, jump in. 20 minutes past the hour, by the way.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, hey, Betsy.
How are you?
I'm well. I didn't know if you were going to talk or not.
Yeah, why not? Once in a while. So, I went to Dayton, Ohio for a week. Had a bat mitzvah. The friend of a, the daughter of a good friend of mine.
Well, howdy.
Dayton is one of the most depressing places on earth to visit right now. It's like half the city is boarded up, not existent, torn down, overgrown. We went through entire neighborhoods where I needed socks, so we went to the strip mall to get socks. 15 different storefronts, one restaurant, and two shops open. That's it. Everything else closed down, out of business. It's, you know, Austin is still a growing town, so I don't see this very often.
Like Detroit, isn't it, Betsy?
Yeah.
I've been there, but...
Anyway. So.
There's a whole lot of that kind of America out in the middle of the, country.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I found it very depressing. Then there were parts that were, so there was a white suburb that we visited one night that was yuppies and a lot of money and, you know, the bar scene and all of that stuff. One of those fancy movie theaters with the IMAX. I mean, just, you know, everything's built in the last 5 years and gorgeous. And then we went through miles upon miles of nothing.
It is kind of shocking, isn't it?
It was. Yeah, to me, Dayton, Ohio.
Dang.
Yeah.
I thought, like, places like Compton or South Central or Watts is bad, but abandoned buildings.
Yeah, it was.
I think Dayton's pretty...
East L.A. is jumping. I mean, they have small businesses in East L.A. And like, South L.A. and whatnot.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just imagining what it looks like in Dayton. And...
I was in Dayton in 2006 for a...
Much worse.
Yeah, I know.
It's all post.
But I was up around, I think it was Wayne State University, and then we were traveling back and forth to the Air Force Museum every day, basically. And I did go see the Wright Brothers Museum in downtown Dayton, I think it
was. Yeah, we went. That was not my choice, but that was one of the afternoons. I was there for, like, almost a week.
I think Dayton's pretty, southern Ohio is pretty red. Pretty Republican.
I was there in August, and all I remember is hot and sticky. I can't stand humidity anymore.
So, anyway, so that was... The rest of the trip was nice. I got to play with the cutest nearly six-year-old on two continents. And take care of him for a while. My nephew. Was visiting from France. So.
Are you speaking to him in French?
So he told me flat out on the first day that his father speaks French and I don't. And I should talk to him in English. Which is fine. We did better that way.
Is your French a little rusty?
I'm sorry, my French isn't bad, but his English is better. I mean, my sister talks to him in English and his father talks to him in French. But, so he was pretty balanced, and then he started school, and now that he's been in school for a year, French is definitely stronger.
Does he speak English with a French accent?
He does. He's got a little French accent, and when he skinned his knee, he complained about his bobo instead of his boo-boo. Yeah, he's got a couple of sort of second language issues, but...
Are you going to send him up to Quebec?
Well, his father has family in Quebec, so I'm sure at some point he will get there. Yeah, well, I got to play tour guide when my sister and her husband got married. And they had one wedding. They got married in France first, and all of the French family was there. And then they got married again in New Jersey, and the Montreal family was there. And I got to play tour guide because I had absolutely no interest in flowers or any of that stuff. So, but that was like 8 years ago. No, 10 years ago.
But didn't you go to New York on your trip?
I did. I went to Yankee Stadium. I went a lot of places. I went to Philly and saw Cassie. I went to Delaware and saw my parents and Augustine. Went to Yankee Stadium. Went to Dayton, Ohio. That's it.
Well, how's Cassie doing?
Cassie
How's her little sister?
I'm sorry?
How is her little sister?
She's doing well. She is as intense as usual. She's actually working in Baltimore for the summer, but she came up one day. The first Sunday I was there, she came up. She seems to be doing well. She's working for a legal aid, youth legal aid type society. She told me the name of it, in Baltimore. She went down there with one of her professors during the, I don't want to say riots, during the protests in Baltimore back in April, and the professor gave either extra credit or something for them to go, for his students to go down there and interview the young people who'd been arrested. And she ended up getting hired for a summer gig with the agency that they work with.
How many years of school she got left?
2. She just finished her first year.
Okay.
Is she liking it?
Nope. But, you know, I mean, I remember when she started high school, and she hated the first year of high school, and she hated the first year of college, so I don't even listen. I mean, I listen, but...
Yeah, you know that first year of law school is where they're rewiring your brain.
That how you were, Bob, when you first went to law school? Are you Rick?
I'll let Rick take that one.
I don't think Rick's here.
Maybe away from the mic or something.
Yeah.
Rick, as an aside, apparently there's been some shooting in L.A. and Studio City.
Ooh, let me check that out.
It's close to where my family is from, and also where Timmy went to high school, Studio City. So.
Oh, yeah, they were shot by an LAPD officer. But then that open fire in Studio City was shot by police on Friday afternoon. Hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, at first I couldn't tell if it was, like, somebody shooting just anybody around, or whether it was
just
a bank robbery, or bank robbery, or what. But it looks like, yeah, some guy was shooting people.
Yeah, I'm seeing gunman opens fire, killed by police.
Yeah, somewhere in Van Nuys or Studio City.
We just keep shooting people.
I got.
We don't. No, hold on a minute. We don't.
As a nation.
Breaking news: a witness says at scene, a police-involved shooting in Los Angeles. This gunman in Studio City was randomly shooting into the air before police arrived.
And there was a situation where there was a immigrant who's been was deported many times, and then ultimately was exonerated. He was charged with a 20-year-old drug bust, and he was found a gun and was shooting up in the air at a stray bullet. It was around the Golden Gate Bridge, and a woman was killed. She didn't even see where it was coming from.
Oh, and the right wing's having a purple polka-dotted hissy over it.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
That was what prompted some of T-Rump's remarks.
Did you hear about that, Betsy?
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Well, I hate to be talking about such negative things, you know. But, you know, we have to do something about guns in this country. There's no reason for anybody, unless they're living in a rural area and they have to go hunting, to have a gun. There's just no reason for it. You have all kinds of law enforcement people. The other thing is, I don't know, I'm sounding really nuts and idealistic, but it seems that we all need, myself included, need to learn some conflict, conflict management skills, or, you know, how to relate to people in such a way that we don't bring these things on each other.
Ay. I mean, I'm sorry, Larry, but no, we don't, no, no, we don't, the majority of peace-loving Americans who don't have guns do not need a kumbaya sensitivity session. It's the people with the damn guns.
Yes, you're right.
This case out of Studio City, one witness, Paul Gilmartin, told the L.A. Times, he said, He fired two shots in the air and two shots at the ground as he sat on a bench or a raised planter outside Union Bank. Gilmartin said it was so bizarre. He wasn't agitated. He looked like he was just waiting for the cops, just kind of calmly looking around. The cops showed up, and they yelled, "Drop the gun, drop the gun." And they took cover behind their patrol car doors, and then he raised his gun, and the several shots were fired. And then he said, the witness said when he looked up, he said he saw the man slumped over. Man's condition not yet known. Steve in New York pushing back a little bit. Larry says, "No, Larry, we don't need guns. That's it." Meanwhile, another story coming in from Steve. And I don't think it's related. Steve decided not to take a break after all and went looking a little further into the shooting gallery. A 4-year-old boy wounded in triple shooting in South Los Angeles. A woman and two boys ages 4 and 11 were wounded in a triple shooting in South Los Angeles Thursday night. According to police, a suspect walked up to their vehicle in the 2000 block of West 99th Street, opened fire about 9:50 p.m. The 4-year-old boy was shot in the wrist. The 11-year-old boy and woman were shot in the leg. Motive for the shooting remains unknown.
Well, Steve's point is well taken. I'm just trying to anticipate someone's argument when they say, well, but
why argue with them, Larry?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Are you hoping to change their minds?
I'm not gonna. I don't think I'm going to.
I don't think you are either.
Yeah. Anyway, Studio City.
Because I've had these arguments, and I quit.
Okay.
Because I've looked at the gun goobers, and I've said, listen, you've won, okay? You've won. All I'm asking is for you to not gloat. Okay? You've won. America has decided it will trade its babies for your paranoid fascination with firearms. America has decided it will trade having 5-year-olds become 6-year-olds so that the gun people in America can continue to trade on their old West fantasies where they quickly take cover and save the day by shooting the bad guy.
Yeah.
And it's the truth, Larry.
Yeah, it's. I don't understand this. Well, I don't understand our.
We traded the lives of two women who just wanted to see a damn movie last night, so that the NRA can make more money, so that Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America can stroke his gun and his dick at the same time.
Uh huh.
And so that terrified white people all over this country can say, well, I've got me an AR-15 that'll shoot 100 rounds a minute in case somebody tries to bust through here and get my TV set that'll watch my Fox on.
Yeah, it's well, I have a question for Timmy about Studio City. I think I know where South Central LA is. And I'm, you know, not that I should be stereotyping, but you thought that Studio City was a place in the valley near Encino where, you know, a lot of people that were in the entertainment industry and relatively prosperous people lived. Have things changed in Studio City since that point, since that period of time? And then, you know, South Central L.A., 99th Street, that's down near Inglewood and Lenox. And,
Larry, I can answer that.
Okay.
Yeah, Studio City is very upscale still. They have really good restaurants there. In fact, I think that's where the place is that I went to last night. Vitello's, the Italian restaurant. So, no, it's a very nice area. So to have shootings there is actually very uncommon, I would say.
What would you say about the 99th Street?
That's probably business as usual, unfortunately. That's South LA. I used to go down there when I was a government attorney. We'd interview people who had bad returns prepared by, tax preparers who were under criminal investigation. And they would make up businesses that, you know, they didn't really own just so they'd get the earned income credit, that kind of thing. And, we would drive around the hood, and I'd be with a special agent who had a sidearm and, interview witnesses, prepare cases, that kind of thing. And it's one of those areas where, you know, if you're – I'd rather not be there after sound on, let me just say, you know.
That's a legacy of racism in this country and in this society that...
Yeah, the segregation is certainly, yeah, unfortunately so. And a lot of those areas are also surrounding the freeways, so people, you know, all sorts of people pass through there on the freeways and never even actually stop in the neighborhoods, you know, surrounding the freeways, so... I guess that's another thing. They always seem to build the freeways through the, more of the poor folks' neighborhoods rather than, let's say, through Bel Air or, you know, someplace like that, you know?
Well, that's because the freeways are built to service people that have cars and people who are well off and encouraging, I'm not making sense, and encourages... people to live out in the suburbs. It encourages urban sprawl.
Yeah.
And people can just pass right over all the, you know, they don't have to go through Century Boulevard or where the Inglewood Forum is or any of those places.
My apartment is significantly cheaper than it would be if I didn't have freeway noise. So, I mean, here they don't build it. They don't put the highways right near where wealthier people live, or at least they didn't.
By the way, just go ahead, Spark.
No sound walls?
No. There's another complex between me and the freeway, so it's not horrible, but it would definitely be cheaper if I were further in.
Further in the city or further out of the city?
Further, three more blocks away from the highway.
Yeah, it would be cheaper. Yeah, well, that's the way that.
I want to turn back to the shooting in Lafayette for a minute, if I may, please. 19 minutes to go in the program, by the way, and again, let me extend thanks to you, Jack, and to Jim in Louisiana, Stan. And as well as to Dave in Ohio, we did close our deficit for the week, and that's monumentally important. That doesn't mean that we don't still need help. Anybody wanting to help out can go to headonradionetwork.com and the contribute tab, and it is always profoundly appreciated. But there's more details coming out. There are more details coming out about John Hauser. Among other things, just in case anybody's wondering, because the NRA always says that these crimes are perpetrated by people who will get, you know, criminals will always get guns. Well, he's a lawful gun owner. Who just happened to become an awful gun owner. He purchased the firearm that he used last night in Lafayette, Louisiana. He purchased it last year in a pawn shop in Alabama. Purchased it legally. Never mind the fact that 9 years ago he was denied a concealed carry permit in Alabama. He was still able to purchase legally a semi-automatic handgun last year in Alabama, even though he had a history of bizarre behavior. And one more thing about the murderer Hauser, the terrorist Hauser, and this is important. The Southern Poverty Law Center, through its Hate Watch program, was able to go and find out a number of things about him, some of which I previously mentioned. You know, the financially failing filth farm that is the United States, and how Iran occupies a moral high ground compared to the aforesaid financially failing filth farm that is the United States. Among other things, he praised, hey, who's got 8:44 p.m.? He praised Adolf Hitler for accomplishing far more than any other. That's a quote. But here's the part that grabbed me. It was January of 2014 when he posted something saying that other people should, and this is a quote too, realize the power of the lone wolf. And he decided last night to be a lone wolf terrorist. In the service of the ideology of the right-wing Tea Party Republican segment of the country. What is disturbing is that in his manifesto, Dylann Roof also said, nobody's doing anything out there. Everybody's talking online, but that's all they're doing is talking. There's no real KKK anymore. So I guess it falls to me to go out there and do something. These are the same sentiments coming from white males who are separated by 30 years age. That should chill people to the bone. That's two in the space of a month who expressed a determination to be a lone wolf domestic terrorist. And again, I apply the cockroach theory. If you go stumbling into the kitchen at 2 o'clock in the morning and flip on the light and you see one, you've got a million of them. And the same applies to these lone wolves. But is the government worried about it? Does the government even dare talk about it? Remember the right-wing hissy, the NRA hissy, the Fox hissy? When the Bush report on domestic right-wing terrorists came out right after Obama took office in January 2009, and Fox went absolutely ballistic. That left-wing Muslim Kenyan usurper says God-fearing, patriotic, upstanding Christian Americans are the biggest threat to America. How dare he? He hates America, the Kenyan Muslim usurper. Well, it is. And I think John Hauser and Dylan Roof go a long way toward proving that the most dangerous threat to peace and domestic tranquility in this country is the hardcore conservative right wing. Your Birchers, Baggers, Deathers, Tenthers, Ninthers, Booger Eaters, Tea Partiers. They're ready to go. And we're all just standing at that roulette wheel watching that white marble spin around, aren't we?
And you don't want to be the one that sets them off.
MSNBC reporting that the bomb squad has now been called in at the Studio City shooting because there may be a bomb next to the body.
Yeah, I saw that on Breaking News.
Yeah, that always happens.
Well, it's probably just the backpack he had his Freedom Protector in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he sounds like a suicide cop by cop guy.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there's nobody out there bumping off right-wing politicians. And I'm not saying anyone should be. They damn near killed Gabby Giffords, and she was a moderate Democrat. And it still wasn't enough to do anything. Clemente Pinckney in South Carolina was a member of the South Carolina State Senate. Still not enough to do anything. And then, of course, there's all the little six-year-olds that were chopped into chutney in Newtown.
I was tweeting last night about what Jindal said, and somebody tweeted back to me. I was talking about their usage of the word evil, and some guy said it was the godless left. You know, they're that nuts, that misinformed. And so there's that mixed in. And then another paranoia thing was a few weeks back in Texas. There was that military exercise.
Oh, Jade Helm, it's underway now. It's its own hashtag.
Oh, okay.
There's a hashtag out there, hashtag OMG Jade Helm. All kinds of...
And a bunch of, I don't know, paranoids thought, the military's invading, invading Texas.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're standing at recruiting centers, guarding the recruiters.
Yeah, and they support the troops. But they're all paranoid that, somebody's going to come get them from the government, and that's going to be the troops,
Yeah. Per the latest executive order, chili without beans shall be considered contraband. OMG Jade Helm. Yeah, OMG Jade Helm is a lot of fun. You should look it up. It's
Say it again, OMG.
OMG OMG, Jade Helm.
Okay.
Reports of troops in ghillie suits moving west on I-10 outside Beaumont, Texas.
Troops in the bar?
Our brave commander-in-chief makes surprise visit to the troops in occupied Austin. This occupation paperwork is ridiculous. Death panel? More like bore me to death panel, and it's not even recycled paper. OMG, Jade Helm.
And, you know, I can't think of anything other than, you know, of why it's happening, other than we got a black president, you know.
OMG, Jade Helm, Massachusetts, shipping thousands of gay men to serve as mandated husbands for Texas citizens.
Wait, is that, like, parodies?
Oh, yeah, it's people just making fun of the wingnuts.
Oh, okay. All right.
We're capturing country music radio stations and changing their format to smooth jazz as we push further behind enemy lines. OMG, Jade Helm.
That's a problem. We think they're we can poke fun at them, but they hate people so.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There is
so
danger
intense.
Involved because they will shoot your ass. And then Steve reminding us that if it comes down to it, the atheist yell is, "Nobody Akbar!" I like it.
Ours should be intelligent curiosity.
Right. Well, apparently, I'm looking in the chat room, and Jug of Punch says Driftglass and I are on the same page. Jug of Punch says Driftglass has convinced me that there is no fact that will change the goobers' minds, sweet Uncle Liberty and all. Because they don't want their minds changed. They like this. And it goes back to what I said to Larry. They like this. You know, sure, the for-profit media wrings hands and Bobby Jindal comes out and says, "This was unimaginable." But the gun goobers are out there getting off on it. A whole bunch of them were probably up there cleaning their weapons. You never know when one of them liberal lone wolves is going to come here, Marveline. I want to be ready. Hey, Ron in Canada popped in. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
Well, you sound dandy.
Well, thank you, sir. It's my new and improved mouth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not some highfalutin technical gadgetic wizardry?
Well, there's a little bit of that, but I had a molar out today, and it improved the interior acoustics amazingly.
Wait. Did they? Were you conscious the whole time, or did they secretly implant a Jade Helm transmitting unit or receiver? It's not a transmitter. It's a receiver.
No, I was conscious the entire time. Not a single alien visited me. And it was a memorable experience. So, not something I'd recommend on a daily basis. So how are you doing, Bob?
You know, I'm among the living. We got 6 minutes of programming left, and then it's weekend time.
Well, I would have called in a bit sooner, but we're visited by our lovely golden retriever grand dogs, which we're looking after for the weekend.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, you say golden retriever, you have to say, oh.
Yeah, these guys are pretty special. I just wanted to call in to see if the new headset worked any better than mouth-breathing into the little tiny mic on my MacBook.
Yeah, this sounds
apparently
great.
It does.
This sounds really great.
Good. Glad to hear it. That way people won't think of me as a, you know, almost illiterate hillbilly.
Oh, no, you're a fully literate hillbilly. Everybody knows that.
In any event, it is summertime.
Even in the frozen freaking north.
Frozen freaking north. I went to, finally after 25 years of losing golf balls, I went to, about 3 weeks ago and tracked down a instructor, started taking lessons, and the first thing he did was said, okay, here's an 8-iron, here's your 8-iron, hit 5 balls for me. I did, and they went typically for my 8-iron, and he said, how old are you? And I said, 67. He said, well, I'm 66. I don't know if we have enough time.
Oh, that was cold.
But we're getting along well. If I can remember to do 5 out of the 6 things he wants me to do on every
and
swing.
And in the right order.
That's right. It is just marvelous.
Oh, I remember the first time a fella cured my slice. It was beautiful. I mean, it was just gorgeous. And then within a couple of weeks, I'd fallen back into my dastardly ways, and the banana ball was back with, you know, vengeance, and I was aiming 45 degrees away from the pin off the tee. And, it'd be fun to get back out on the golf course someday. It's been so long, I've probably got an old guy swing now.
It's called the lurch. There is a little course that I've played in your neighborhood. I forget the name of it. It's in pretty close to Beckley. It might be called a Briar Patch.
Briar Patch, yeah, I played that.
Yeah. Somebody was on acid when they designed that.
Yes, they were. But not near
there
as much. But not near as much as the one over by. Oh God, how do you get there? I'm trying to remember. It's off Gatewood Road or something. There's one over between Fayetteville or near Oak Hill. And I think it's the 12th hole is just plain old fashioned unfair. Because it's like a par 4 should under some circumstance be reachable in one. I mean, if you're a real stud.
Yeah.
But this thing is straight downhill, copses of trees, and then the green is tucked over in a little pocket to the left so that there's just no damn way. And I don't mind getting my ass whipped by a golf course, but you know, but an unfair hole, no.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever heard of having to lay up on a par 4? I mean,
Well, I lay up on a lot of par 4s, but it's inadvertent. But I used to play Glade Springs, but now that Jim Justice has bought it, they've seen the last dollar they'll get from me. So,
let's see. As an expatriate, do you get an absentee vote in the West Virginia gubernatorial? No, I guess not.
No, because the last official residence I had before I went into the military and then after that left was in Ohio. So if I wanted to, I would be entitled to vote in Ohio, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. My vote would be in Boehner's district, and we know how that would work out, right?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I have no idea what kind of act of manifest futility I'm going to engage in. Am I really going to vote for a damn billionaire for governor? I mean, just because you get a D after your name doesn't mean you get my vote. But when you compare him with the alternative, that car dealer with the jet, the one who says that somebody who makes $60,000 a year makes an unfairly high wage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys, we got to get out of here.
My headset works. I'm happy to talk to you. Give money, guys. Come on. Cough it up.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly.
Oh, really? Okay. Jeez.
All right, time to get out of here. Thank you for the pitch, Ron. Much appreciated. And one of these evenings, with his new headset, Ron and I will have the high functioning hillbilly hour or something. Again, thanks everybody for a wonderful week's broadcasting. Thank you to our all volunteer staff, and thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, It's all for you. Have a great weekend, everyone.